Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we're going to wrap up the January window. We're going to do some winners and losers of what transpired in Serie A over the transfers. We have 1,000 names with his game picks since we have a weekend of Serie A action. We do have, of course, Twitter questions from our listeners that we'll get to today. No guests. Transfer window took a big toll on me, so we're going to do just an episode with Alex and I next week. We have some cool guests planned for you. So I'm joined, of course, by Alex Goldberg, producer, co-host, Chelsea influencer. We actually have a question for you later on in the podcast on Chelsea. But before we get to that, Alex, wanted to talk about Milan and Inter at the top. They're really going in very different trajectories at the moment. So I'm going to ask you this. Do you think Milan fans have more reasons to be optimistic compared to Inter fans having reasons to be pessimistic at this time?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So I've thought about it a little bit. And originally, I'll be honest, I wanted to say that Inter fans have more reason to be pessimistic because their last three games in all competitions have just been not good. Losing to Lazio in the Coppa Italia and then losing to Torino 1-0 and then a 0-0 draw to Sassuolo. That's really not pretty. And yeah, they've absolutely lost momentum and it feels like they're kind of falling off the tracks. But I am going to be a little bit more positive here on all fronts. First of all, for Inter, maybe it's not as bad, David, as it looks in terms of the last three games, because four games ago in the Coppa Italia, they did score six goals against Benevento, and I understand that's much lesser competition, but still, they are in third place, and when it's all said and done, when the season's over, if they can have third place or at worst fourth, it's not horrific. It really isn't, and yes, I was high on all their acquisitions this summer because they were acquisitions that I feel didn't need a lot of time to get used to the team, but it's still a lot of acquisitions. So inevitably, there are going to be ups and downs. But then conversely, the reason why I'm saying Milan fans have more reasons to be optimistic is really just one major, major reason and a couple others. But Piontek's performance earlier this week was astounding. It was phenomenal. It made so many Chelsea fans be like, oh, God, we got the wrong striker. And hey, David, I know you and I have kind of had our doubts a little bit on Piontek. And is what he did in the first half of the season that legit? Or did we need to see a bigger sample size? And I'm not going to be a prisoner of the moment just from that one game with Milan. But there was just something about him in that game where he didn't give a flying you-know-what. And he was really forceful. And if Milan can have a striker like that that performs like that, but also makes the team and the fans feel like they're ascending in a good direction, that's hugely important. Sometimes one acquisition can really almost change the culture, but it's more than just Piontek. How about the performances from Bakayoko still? When you start to have Bakayoko and Paqueta putting in performances and giving the team a new look, I mean, there are multiple reasons for Milan fans to be optimistic. So I definitely would be nervous if I was an Inter fan, but I really don't think it's maybe as bad as it looks. And for Milan, there's just so much optimism and it really is justified. So David, that's my answer. What about you?
I have a very hard time picking, so I'm going to talk myself through it and then come to the conclusion. So I recently watched this documentary on Netflix on the Fire Festival, and it really makes me think of both teams right now. Milan, as you said, Piontek's been fantastic. And look, we had our doubts on him. We were very high on Inter going into the season. Right now, that doesn't look great. But, you know, I'm thinking right now, Milan fans, they've had this great turnaround with the striker. They played Napoli very tough in Serie A, 0-0 drill. Then they beat them in the Coppa Italia. All the other teams, Juve lose decisively against Atalanta. Napoli, even Ancelotti, is now getting questioned. Inter are in full crisis mode. So right now, Milan, in a way, are a little bit like Ja Rule in the Fire Festival documentary. They've struggled for a few years. Maybe they weren't, you know, on the limelight. There's a disaster all around them, but he's there partying unscathed. Everyone else suffers, and Milan's just sitting very pretty. They also have players coming back from injuries. As you said, Bakayoko has been absolutely sensational. They're getting Biglia back soon as well. So a lot of reasons to be optimistic. If you're Milan, I think Gattuso deserves a lot of credit for that. Inter, on the other hand, are right now, I always used to say, you know, the Britney Spears with a shaved head, you know, hitting an SUV with an umbrella part of their season. Right now, there's such a crisis at Inter, not just on the pitch, but also off it. Yesterday, Spalletti threw Marotta under the bus, saying he shouldn't have talked publicly about Perisic potentially leaving. And I saw Inter fans, you know, siding with Spalletti. And it's like, look, with all due respect, Marotta has been an architect, one of the main architects of Juve winning all these titles. I like Spalletti, but he really hasn't won much. There's the Conte shadow over Spalletti. Lautaro Martinez has been struggling recently. There was the Nainggolan continues to be, you know, not the player that they were expected. And, you know, and you compare that to Zaniolo being a superstar. So right now, Inter, it's kind of like on Fyre Festival when all the rich influencers arrive at the camp. And instead of having the luxury tents and the luxury villas, they're basically in the FEMA tents and they're running to get mattresses that are soaked in water. Like, that's really the crisis that Inter are in. Though, if we look at the standings, Inter still have 5 more points than Milan. They are in third place. They are, you know, one thing that I've always looked at, you know, they are closer to Napoli than Napoli is to Juve, which was one thing that I was really looking at this season. But I could really see with what's going on off the pitch, and then there's Icardi's extension, which is going to happen regardless of this. So there's just a lot of factors. So I'm going to go and say that I think right now Inter fans have more reasons to be pessimistic, also because we know that this is kind of the MO of the club here. So I think it's time for Marotta to kind of use his Juve DNA, make it, you know, try to take away the distractions. And, you know, at Juve was all about the club, not necessarily the individual players. So I think we need to see something there on Inter trying to do a turnaround. I could really see things going south further if Inter continue to struggle. So let's see what happens over the weekend. At least the schedule's in their favor. They play at home against Bologna. Milan, on the other hand, are facing Roma, who are reeling after giving up 7 goals. But we know in Serie A how quickly things can change. So at the moment, I'm going to go with Inter in bigger crisis. Although Milan does have some great reasons to be optimistic.
Yeah, well, certainly, and I'm not saying this at the expense of Inter fans. I do love the fact that Milan and Inter down the stretch are two huge storylines. All in all, that is great for Serie A. So, David, you said it at the top. We are now at February 1st, which means the January transfer window is behind us. So we're going to do a unique version of winners and losers. Let's do our winners and losers of the January window.
So before we get to the teams, I'm going to name Serie A as a whole as the winners of the January window because of 2 very significant Bosman signings. So granted, they're not official, but both Ramsey took a medical for Juve and Godin took a medical for Inter. So these were, you know, 2 highly sought after players. Godin's an elite center back, although he's older. He's not going to Juve. It's great to see Inter, who's done quite well with these Bosman signing, get one, an international one, as opposed to De Vrij, who was already in Italy. And for Juve, look, Ramsey was linked to a ton of top clubs. I'm not convinced he can be the only addition to Juve's midfield, but he could certainly be an intriguing piece. I think it's great for the league that we have 2 very significant Bosman signings coming in next summer. Then for the teams, we have to start with Milan. And yesterday, purposely put a question on our Calcio Land, the Twitter account, asking people, you know, who was the team in Serie A who won the January transfer window? And this was at the eve of the last day. And I purposely did it because I know a lot of Milan fans were hoping that they would also land a winger, but there was not one person that didn't pick Milan, even with the uncertainty on the winger. So I get the disappointment that Carrasco didn't come in, a player equivalent to him. But let's not forget, Milan really had two great additions in Paqueta and Piontek, two players that are in age closer to the rest of their nucleus, despite their financial fair play issues. So Milan, to me, are the clear winners as a team in Serie A. Then we have a few more that I thought did well. I think Sampdoria handled the transfer window very well. They brought Gabbiadini back to Serie A. He already scored. Is going to be a nice alternative complementary piece to Quagliarella. Quagliarella, of course, has been fantastic, but he is up in age. Gabbiadini could be their main striker in a season or two. In addition to Gabbiadini, Sampdoria also redeemed the rights from Juve for goalkeeper Audero, who's been one of the maybe three, five best goalkeepers in Serie A all season. So now they own him outright. And I think that's a really nice move for them because that gives them more flexibility. He's been linked to Arsenal. They can either flip him in the summer for a bigger fee than what they paid Juve to acquire him, or keep him on and have, you know, a very, very exciting top-notch goalkeeper on the squad. Then we're going to go over some more lower table team first. I thought Bologna, although they did sack Pippo Inzaghi, they had to really improve the squad. And I think it was smart to bring in Sansone and Soriano very early in the January window. I think they basically were telling Pippo Inzaghi, we're going to give you a chance. We're going to bring you some reinforcements, but you need to show us something now that we brought these two in. Pippo Inzaghi, the results didn't get any better, didn't win any matches despite these two significant additions in the race to avoid relegation. They make the managerial change and brought in Mihailovic and then bring him in two more players from Torino, center back Bianco and Edera, who's an offensive winger. So Bologna made some pretty substantial improvements to the squad, which I thought was one of the weakest in Serie A. And I think Mihailovic is going to be a good addition as manager too. Then we have Cagliari, who made a good short-term move by bringing in Walter Birsa, who had his best season playing for their current coach, Maran, at Chievo. They got him on a really cheap deal. I've always been a big Birsa fan. I think for a club like Cagliari, he's a very intriguing addition. They also brought in another good veteran and striker Thoreau, who hadn't found much space at Fiorentina. He gives them insurance on Pavoletti. They also did bring in some younger players, Luca Pellegrini, not Lorenzo, but Luca Pellegrini, a Roma prospect left back on loan. Could be a good move for Roma too to have him play. And they also brought in this midfielder from South America, Oliva, who's been highly rated. He's been compared to Barella, so maybe he could be his long-term replacement. But in addition, they held on to Barella for the rest of the season. I'm pretty much certain he'll be sold in the summer, but he'll help them definitely try to avoid relegation. So clear winners there. Then I'm one person, I'm going to name not a team, but the sporting director for Fiorentina. That's Pantaleo Corvino. The reason I'm going to name him over Fiorentina, who still deserves a lot of credit as a club for what they did in January, is his personal relationship to Luis Muriel. They were together at Lecce, made sure that Muriel picked Fiorentina over Milan. But then you look back on it, for Milan, this worked out really well because maybe if they had Muriel, they don't go for Piontek. And Muriel's been very good for Fiorentina, and so has Piontek for Milan. In addition to that, Pantaleo Corvino added three intriguing prospects for next season, and that's Empoli midfielder Traoré, this Polish prospect, Zorkowski. I've never heard of him. I've never seen him play, but I've seen a lot of people say he's highly rated, and defender Rasmussen. So Fiorentina got a nice head start to the summer transfer window. Corvino is a great scout, especially internationally. So well done there. And we're going to, and then we have Parma, who did brought in Kuchka to bolster their midfield. Older player, but they had done really well with Jorginho's return to Serie A. Kuchka can be a starter for them, not just this season, but next season as well. They also landed this Brazilian keeper, Brazão, in synergy with Inter. He was supposed to go to Chievo, but once they held on to Sorrentino, He goes to Parma. Like, granted, Parma has Sepe, who's been a very good goalkeeper for him. But Brazão, maybe next season, could be their starter if Sepe moves on. And lastly, another team in the race to avoid relegation, Spal. They brought in Viviano, the former Sampdoria keeper who was in Portugal. Definitely above average keeper in Serie A. They brought in another player with Sampdoria roots, and he was on the team, defender Regini. And then they brought in from Partizan Belgrade, Jankovic, and a winger. I've never seen him play. I've heard some pretty good things on him. So Spal definitely improved the team in the race to avoid relegation. On the flip side, for the losers, I am going to go with some other teams in the race to avoid relegation that actually I think weakened themselves considerably. I think Chievo's already basically waving the white flag on the season. I think it's inevitable for them that they're going back to Serie B. They moved on from Birsa and also Albi, another starting caliber midfielder who went to Turkey. So Chievo basically given up on the season. Empoli, who's right in the thick of the race to avoid relegation, they gave up Zaik, highly rated midfielder, went to Fenerbahce in Turkey. Let's see if it has an impact on the race to avoid relegation. I have Genoa as a loser. And look, they did really, really well financially with Piontek. They had spent around 5 million. They flipped him for 35 million within the same season. Granted, you know, Piontek, they could have maybe, you know, if Piontek has a great second half to the season, there could be some regrets on Genoa's end saying, hey, you know, we could have gotten even more for him. But for a club like Genoa, whose annual revenues are around 80 million, when you can get that return and avoid potentially finding yourself in a Belotti situation, you have to do it. But they are a team that is in the race to avoid relegation. They are considerably weaker. Sanabria did score in his first match, but let's see if he can come even close to matching Piontek's performance. They're going to need Kwame, their other striker, to really have a strong half to the season. And they also lost two veterans, two moves that I really like they had done in the summer. Right wing back Romulo, definitely above average player at his position in Serie A, who is now on Lazio, and midfielder Sandro, who went to Udinese. It was interesting that Genoa cashed in on Piontek and that did a bunch of moves, brought in a lot of players. I guess they're trying to hit you know, lightning in a bottle by trying to see if they can find someone else that's going to end up being a big addition. And then Juve, you know, I don't want to beat them up too much over the Benatia thing. I hated this deal the minute it happened, and it got a lot worse because both Bonucci and Chiellini got hurt right after it happened, which was really the worst case scenario. So to me, Juve, and I get the will of the player, this is really what the club's all about. It's not a Marotta thing, but I really think they should have told Benatia, we'll make it worth your while to just stay till the end of the season. You want to go to Qatar, make some money, stay with us. You can be part of a team that has a legitimate chance of winning the Champions League. They've lost a pretty significant insurance policy. And again, I know he's injury prone, but right after he leaves, the fact that Bonucci and Chiellini both got hurt, not a good sign. And then I have not big losers, but Roma and Lazio, who kind of stand pat. Lazio did add Romulo, who could be a pretty good addition, but Marusic is a pretty good player. He hasn't been as good as last season. And Roma, who didn't do anything at all, despite giving up 7 goals to Fiorentina the day before the window closed, maybe they should have a little bit of urgency to add a defender. So while Milan got better, Atalanta's on a huge roll, Roma and Lazio kind of stood pat. So those are our winners and losers for the January window.
All right, David. Well, it certainly was a very interesting January window, but I'm happy that it's now back to pure football. So without further ado, we got some Serie A ahead of us this weekend. So let's transition to game picks with you and Thousand Names. Who you got?
Okay, so you guys know the drill. Thousand Names picks the 3 matches that we both make picks on. I have the advantage of knowing what he's going to pick before I make mine, but he's the one that decides the matches. So the first one he sent me is Napoli. Is Sampdoria traveling to the São Paulo to play Napoli? He has Napoli winning 3-0 with 3 goals from Milik. And the comment is the Polish striker responds to Piontek and gives 3 slaps to the face to Sampdoria manager Gianpaolo. And he says, Napoli play well even when they lose. And that's a reference to their previous match and that they deserve to win the Scudetto. But that with this big win against Sampdoria, they have avenged what happened in the Coppa Italia. So in Italian, Napoli-Samp 3-0, Milik 3 gol. Il polacco risponde a Piontek che suona tra schiaffi a Giampaolo. Napoli gioca bene anche quando perde, merita lo scudetto, vendicata la Coppa Italia. I'm going to go with Napoli win. Sampdoria are good at home, very good at home, not so much on the road. I'm not going to have it as decisive. I'm going to have Napoli win 2-0. I'm going to have Insigne end his scoreless streak with one goal, and I'm going to give Fabian Ruiz the other. Other interesting aspect in this match, Quagliarella is going for scoring, hit 12 for 12 matches in a row, which would be really unbelievable. You know, interestingly, he is from the Napoli region, from Castellammare di Stabia, so it'd be great if he could do it at home. He's had up and down relationship with Napoli fans, so this should be intriguing. Next match picked by Thousand Names. He has he picked Roma Milan, and he has Roma winning 1-0 with a goal by Fazio. And he says, against a team that gave up 10 goals in two matches, Piontek doesn't even get one chance to score. Gattuso's luck is running out, and Eusebio Di Francesco is going to resist. In Italian, Roma-Milan 1-0, Fazio. Contro una squadra che ha preso 10 gol in due partite, Piontek non vede palla. Finito il culo di Gattuso, Eusebio resiste. I'm going to have this as 1-1. I think Milan's going to continue their streak. I'm going to give a goal to El Shaarawy, who leads Roma in goals. And I'm going to go with, I'm going to say Piontek, that he's going to keep proving me wrong, that he wasn't just a small sample size wonder. Last match, and this is Parma traveling to Turin to face Juve. Here it is, this Thousands prediction, Juve-Parma 0-0. I don't even need to translate this part. Ronaldo sbaglia calcio di rigore. Allegri's crisis continues. Juve is going to start seeing all of their objectives go up in thin air one by one, and Ronaldo continues to be even more of a bust. I'm going to have Juve in Italian, Juve-Parma 0-0, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, continua la crisi di Allegri, squadra che vede sfumare gli obiettivi uno dopo l'altro, il portoghese sempre più bidone. I'm going to have Juve winning this one 2-0. I'm going to have a goal for Dybala and one for Ronaldo, not on a penalty kick. So again, the predictions, Thousand and I agree. Napoli is going to beat Samp. He has Roma beating Milan. I have it as a draw. He has Juve Parma as a draw. I think that's more of a troll. I have Juve winning. So those are our game picks for the weekend. And actually, as I mentioned earlier, Inter, another very important match at home against Bologna. Mihailovic's first match on the bench returns to San Siro. And Inter really needs a win here.
All right, well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Last weekend in Serie A was so damn exciting, so hopefully more of the same. All right, David, before we get to our Twitter questions, obviously we've talked about it a bunch already this episode. The January transfer window is over, and I got to assume one of the main tools you used in the January window to kind of de-stress and calm down and get away from all the silliness that the January transfer window really brings, I got to think you really used some bio-CBD, the vape pen, the capsules, maybe the oil to really de-stress and, you know, be more human rather than the January transfer window just makes us all very inhumane. So I can't stress it enough how much we like the products at BioCBD Plus. They really are fast working, give you great relief, and they really cater to kind of what you're looking for. As I said on a previous episode, it's not to say that if you have two puffs out of the vape pen, all of a sudden you're sleepy. No, if you're just looking for relaxation, that will fit you perfectly. It really kind of caters to what you're looking for. I mean, if you want to use the word magical, I think you're totally justified in saying that. We love all three of their products, the capsules, the oil, the vape pens. And it's not just us. So many people who use their products just come away with absolutely glowing reviews and glowing remarks. So we can't suggest it enough. Once again, if you want to get 15% off any of their CBD products at BioCBDPlus.com, use our discount code CALCHOLAND15, all lowercase, CALCHOLAND15, for 15% off their products. They are really, really good.
Yeah, I completely agree. Although we won't be, we're gonna have a different product that we're gonna, you know, talk about next week. I can't thank enough BioCBD Plus. We'll continue using them. I was talking to a colleague at work today that I had a bad shoulder. I told you guys about it, and he loves the product. I almost was gonna bring him on the podcast to have him give us a testimonial because he told me it really, really gave him a lot of benefits. So thanks again to BioCBD Plus. Use that discount code. Even though we won't be plugging them for a little bit on the podcast, we definitely believe in it. So one thing that we always believe in is the contributions from our listeners. You guys always send us fantastic Twitter questions. As always, use the CalchaLand hashtag. It makes it a lot easier for me to find them. We're going to, you know, probably take a little break from transfers for a little bit, keep focusing on Serie A. I love getting some questions for Alex here and there, and we have one today. We have a couple of pop culture ones as well, so keep those coming with the CalchaLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this one. Who had a bigger Coppa Italia implosion, between Roma or Juve?
It's a tough one because Juve, you know, was going for the treble. That was really one of their objectives for the season. They lose 3-0 to Atalanta very decisively. Their defense, Chiellini, goes out. Rugani, I don't want to pick on him too much. Definitely not a great performance. De Sciglio too struggled as a center back. That was really bad. But I have to say, Roma, when you give up 7 goals, which is almost unheard of, Zeko getting a red card. They come back to Rome. They have 30 ultras waiting for them. I'm going to go with Roma because, you know, yeah, for Juve, too bad for the treble. But for them, it's really more about the Champions League. Roma, though, the pressure is really on. I will say Di Francesco's job appears safe even through the Milan match. There's also a lot of buzz that Roma is just going to stick with him through the rest of the season. And I got to be honest, I that makes sense to me. If there was a great replacement, I would do that. But I still think Di Francesco, they've been up and down, which is not that surprising with a young team. But despite the security for Di Francesco, I'm going to say it was a bigger implosion for them. Also because then they really should have made a move to bolster the defense, and they did it. So this could linger even further.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Based on recent performances and players coming in, who do you think will finish in the top four?
I mean, this is kind of a leading question, but if we go based on exactly this, recent performances, Milan's been red hot, players coming in, Piontek and Paqueta, they have to be the answer. In addition to that, Biglia's coming back. I think Caldara might make a cameo soon. Conti keeps getting more and more confidence. So it has to be them. Like right now, if I had to pick a team, that I'm still going to give Inter a Champions League spot. Now, rather that's in third or fourth place, I'm still going to go with them because of the quality of the squad too. I think Milan, though, right now has an edge over Lazio. Atalanta definitely could be a factor in this because they are so red hot. But based on the criteria on the question, it has to be Milan.
Okay, how about this? Do you think Gasperini could succeed at a club like Roma or Lazio?
You know, I have to say, up until the past 2 weeks, I kept saying that Gasperini is just perfect for Atalanta and really should just be like kind of how Guidolin was at Udinese and be in that cycle. But now the more I think of it, I think at Roma, he'd be really, really intriguing. Now, my dream for Roma is Mourinho. It would never happen, but just I think he would embrace the culture of the city incredibly well, and they would adore him there. But since that's not going to happen, I'm going to say that Gasperini would make a lot of sense. And that's why it's another reason why I think Roma should just tough it out with Di Francesco this season, see what happens. But I think he'd be really excellent there. Lazio too, but Roma more for their business model, you know, for lack of a better word, being a supermarket, Gasperini is perfect for that. I think he'd be a really nice fit there. So as much as I like Atalanta, I do think Roma would be a step up, and that would be a really nice landing spot for him.
All right, I like this one. Who will score more goals between now and the end of the season per minute played between Higuain, Piontek, and Morata?
This is a tough one because I think it's pretty easy to want to pick Piontek right now. But I'm going to go with Higuain. And also another reason I'm going to say that because of the criteria per minute played. It sounds like Sarri even today was saying he's out of game shape. Maybe Higuain's going to get, you know, a little bit of rest, maybe not play full matches for a little bit, round himself in game shape. And look, you know, I've said it, just because it's addition by subtraction for Milan to move on from him and Piontek's been great, that doesn't mean that Higuain can't do well at Chelsea. And I think it's eventually going to click. I know Chelsea's a little bit in turmoil right now. So I'm going to go with him. Morata, look, you know, maybe leaving the Premier League, being back in Madrid at Atletico is what he needed. I'm a big Morata guy, but I'm going to go with him. Now, I know you're a little bit biased on this one, Alex, but which one are you going with?
Yeah, well, if it was goals total, I would obviously go Piontek, Higuain, Morata. But since it's goals per minute, maybe that would give Morata a better chance. But I'm still putting Morata last. I just have a bad taste in my mouth about Morata. But maybe he does turn it around. He just certainly is not going to be starting as many games as Piontek and Higuain. I still think Piontek will probably lead, but it'll be close because, as you said, Higuain is not fully fit, so I doubt he's going to play too many full 90s, and I do expect him to score. Obviously, some Chelsea fans are being prisoners of the moment after his first two games and maybe already saying that he's a flop. I think that's wildly, wildly irrational. I do expect Higuain to score, but I still think the biggest thing for Higuain is he's going to be a goal threat. I'm not expecting him to score a load of goals, far from it, but I just think having him out there will present a goal threat. I think Piontek will score a good amount and be on the pitch a good amount, and he will just edge out Higuain in terms of goals per minute. So I would still go Piontek, Higuain, Morata.
Let's stay on Chelsea. This is a question that came in for you, Alex, and one of our listeners asked, if you could loan out Chelsea's board for 18 months, who would you bring in as a new sporting director for the time being?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, somebody who's always somebody I think about in that role in a good way is Monchi. But actually, David, I have to go with a little bit of a unique choice here, and that would be Michael Ballack, who obviously is pretty well known in the footballing world, has played a couple places, the German, but obviously has a strong, strong connection and love for Chelsea. And I choose him because everything he has said publicly about Chelsea, I've been totally, totally on board with. He has talked about how there is a disconnect between the club and the manager constantly. He's talked about the culture of Chelsea. He's even had the balls to kind of say that nobody within the Chelsea squad right now gives him the greatest feeling of where their priorities are. He's also talked about how it's more important for Chelsea to start integrating youth. I mean, he has consistently come out and said all of the things that I think the majority of Chelsea fans say, and that's not just the youth people. Of course, I'm somebody who always advocates for more youth, but if you're a sporting director, you're doing more than just integrating youth. You're looking at all areas, improving the team. He has said all corners, all areas of where I think Chelsea struggle and how he thinks they should improve and how he would improve them. Not necessarily him trying to get the job. These are just real, authentic thoughts of his. Is it a little bit of a risk? Absolutely. But I really think that Chelsea overall, David, need to start bringing in people, and maybe it is past legends. They need to start bringing in people who really care for the club, right? And I'm not saying Maurizio Sarri doesn't. I'm not even necessarily saying they need to bring in managers who care for the club. They just need to start giving important roles. I mean, they don't have a DOF. They do not have a director of football. And Marina, who runs the business side, is a businesswoman. She's not a football person. Chelsea are going to continue to have instability within their club until they bring people in, like a John Terry, like a Michael Ballack, like a Petr Cech, and of course, like a Frank Lampard, who truly care for the club, understand the club, and need to have more connection between the owner, the club, the board, the manager, the players. And I think Michael Ballack, as a sporting director, maybe it wouldn't start off great at first. Maybe it's a lot easier said than done. But I really think he has a great idea of what Chelsea are sorely, sorely lacking. So I'm going to take a really kind of unique answer instead of saying someone like Monchi and say Michael Ballack is my answer. So, David, let's move away from football right now. Let's move to music, shall we? What is your favorite Rolling Stones album?
Yeah, obviously a band that I really love, listen to my whole life. So I would say there's four records that stand out. There's one favorite that I have, and I'm going to go with that last. So Exile on Main Street is probably the answer most people would give. It has the greatest backstory. Like, they recorded this in the south of France. They had tax problems in the UK. This was Keith Richards really getting into drugs. And the blues sound that we associate with the Stones, really, really prevalent here. Tumbling Dice, Happy, Rocks Off, the opening track. It's just a great vibe to that record. So if you pick that, I wouldn't fight you, that's for sure. Then another one, Let It Bleed, very famous album. This has a lot of very famous songs. Gimme Shelter, who we must have seen in like five Scorsese movies and is used constantly in TV, music, ads, and whatnot. Let It Bleed and You Can't Always Get What You Want is on this record. And then one of my favorite Stones tracks, Monkey Man's on this as well. And then the other one that's really famous is Sticky Fingers. And this one has Brown Sugar, Wild Horses, and Dead Flowers. Any of these picks, I think you'd be fine. But mine is definitely Beggar's Banquet, my favorite Stones album. This is one that when I listen to it, I always listen it front to back and never skip anything. Has more of an acoustic sound to it. Just really, really excellent. It opens with Sympathy for the Devil, has Street Fighting Man, and it has my favorite Stones song ever, which is Jigsaw Puzzle. So Stones touring again this summer, unbelievable. It's really incredible. I've been thinking a lot about how weird it is with ages and rock stars. Like, yesterday was John Lydon's birthday, and he was the lead singer in the Sex Pistols. And I remember I saw the Pistols reunion tour in 95, and the Sex Pistols were like in their mid-40s at the time. And I was young, and I looked at them like complete dinosaurs, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm seeing them. These guys are so old. 45, and now it's pretty incredible because the Stones are like 30 years older than them. They're still touring. It's pretty incredible to think that Eddie Vedder is older now than Jerry Garcia at the age he died, which is something Andy Greed from Rolling Stone points out. So it's really pretty remarkable that the Stones are still around and still doing it at 75. And, you know, when you have a catalog like they do, people are still going to buy tickets to go. That's for sure.
All right, David, last Twitter question. Now that you have finally seen it, what did you make of The Green Book?
Yeah, and actually, I know you saw this before me. So, I have to wait a while for this one. So I always try to see all the movies nominated for the Best Picture at the Oscar. That was one of the last ones. I still have to see BlacKkKlansman, which I will do over the weekend. So Green Book's back in the theaters after it got a lot of nominations. I went to see it. So for me, here's my take on it. I think it's a very good movie. It's a definition of a crowd pleaser, but I think it really depends on, you know, what are you expecting out of it? I think Marshawn Ali, an actor we've talked about, that was in Moonlight, is in The Season of True Detective, fantastic actor. He's great in it. Viggo Mortensen, as, you know, the Italian driver who gets enlightened on racism and all, fantastic in this movie. He's hilarious. I think he plays the character incredibly well. So if you kind of take it as like a comedy type of movie, buddy type movie, two guys, you know, different backgrounds and, you know, trying to connect, it's really, really great. Like, it held my attention the whole time. My wife absolutely loved that movie. She loved it way more than Roma, a lot of the movies that I really enjoyed. So to me, if you take it that way, you're going to have a great time. Now, if you want to take it as, you know, a commentary on like racism and whatnot, I think there's a little bit more problems there. There's been, you know, a lot of controversy on this. So, you know, again, keep in mind, this is made from the director of There's Something About Mary, like a lot of like raunchy comedies from the 90s. So to me, it's like the kind of political, social commentary you would expect from someone like that. So there are some scenes that maybe are a little bit problematic in that sense. But if you try to take it less seriously and you focus on the performances, you're going to have a great time. I know you saw this too and you liked it, Alex. Anything you want to add or anything that stood out to you on that one?
Yeah, I would just say I absolutely love the chemistry between Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali. I totally echo what you said about Mahershala Ali. It seems like the guy can do no wrong right now, and I wouldn't even say it's oversaturation. He's absolutely everywhere. He's in shows. He's in movies. But I really think that that is justified. He just seems like an actor who is really kind of like a footballer. He's really in great, great form. But yeah, I loved the chemistry between him and Viggo. And then I actually love, this is really small, but I love this stand-up comedian, Sebastian Maniscalco, who really is kind of a trendy comedian. And he had a role as he was Viggo Mortensen's stepbrother in that movie. And yeah, it was a small role, but I just loved the end of the movie where, I won't spoil too much, but where Mahershala Ali's character comes in on Christmas Eve. And because of that racist aspect at that time, there was a little bit of awkwardness, but then Sebastian Maniscalco's character really kind of broke the ice in a great fashion. And I'll be honest, it was a little bit of a tearjerker for me. I just thought it was really, really well done.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Good movie. I absolutely recommend that. I have to say, I liked it better than I thought I would. It's kind of fun. I mean, I go to movie theater with my wife, and usually I can always predict before, you know, which of the two of us are going to like it more. And this was one time where I was a little bit off. I knew she was going to love it, and I was like, I have a feeling I'm not going to like this, and I liked it a lot better. So this is the show for the second show for the week. I want to thank you guys all for your support. On a personal note, the January transfer window was really awesome. I want to thank all the guests on Calcioland. We've had really a great month. Alex, you've done superb work, not just keeping up with me with doing all these episodes, but your contributions have been great. I want to thank everyone for their support with a bunch of other things. I was very lucky this January. I did some new things, and it only happens thanks to your support. Just know that I never take it for granted. You have so many good options out there for content, and I'm very grateful that you consume my content and what Alex and I do together. So we look forward to chatting with you on Monday. We're going to have some pretty cool guests coming, so stay tuned for that.